Welcome to the Deep Dive. So today we're tackling something that I think is one of the most persistent struggles in family life.
It really does.
You know, how do we move beyond just managing bad behavior and actually build genuine lifelong initiative in our children, of course, but also in ourselves?
It's a total shift in focus. I mean, most of the energy of parenting or really even managing a team is work. It's all focused on solving what we could call point A.
Point A being?
Stopping defiance, correcting a bad attitude, just getting someone to comply. But this framework, it really challenges us to shift our vision completely to point B.
Which is true maturity.
Exactly. True maturity, where a person is internally motivated and they proactively contribute to the world around them.
And what's so fascinating is how powerful that visioning process actually is for building that motivation. We sort of know this instinctively, even if we don't always apply it. I mean, think about potty training a toddler. You don't just focus on punishing the accidents. You spend months creating this vision of being a big boy or a big girl. You're focusing on the benefits, on the mastery.
That is the perfect analogy. We're essentially trying to translate that same intrinsic desire, that desire to grow up and master something, into the day-to-day cooperation a family needs to, you know, just function.
So if we want that contribution later on, we have to show them what that future looks like now.
And let them feel the benefits of being competent and helpful.
Okay, so let's unpack this. The authors give us a diagnostic tool to help map out this whole transition. It's called the Cooperation Index.
Yeah, the Cooperation Index. It's basically an internal metric for evaluating a child's attitude and their contribution to the family. It's not just about what they do, but how they do it.
So it provides clear markers.
Right. So parents know what they're actually trying to achieve, both, you know, in the short term and for the long haul.
So where do we start on this scale? What's the bottom?
We start at minus 10. That's the land of defiance, disrespect, stomping off, or just that outright bad attitude when you ask them to do something. This is where most parental frustration lives.
I think we can all picture minus 10. So the immediate goal for any parent in that situation is just getting to zero.
Exactly. Zero means compliance. The chore gets done. The homework is finished. They are doing what they are told. This is the goal of pure obedience.
And for a lot of parents, just getting a kid who lives at minus 10 to reliably hit zero, I mean, that feels like a huge victory.
It does. It really does feel like a victory. But the framework makes this really critical argument that zero is, quote, not enough.
Why? Why is just getting the task done still not enough for that long-term growth?
Because you're still the energy source. You're still the one pushing. If the child only ever hits zero, they still require constant management, constant reminding, nagging, all that parental oversight.
Their motivation is still external.
Totally external. They're trying to avoid a consequence or maybe get some praise, but it's not coming from the internal satisfaction of a job well done or, you know, contributing to the family.
And if that's the pattern for life, you, the parent, are just perpetually exhausted.
Precisely. So for a child to develop that real character and to overlearn cooperation, meaning it just becomes part of who they are, they need to reach for positive 10.
And positive 10 is characterized by initiative.
Yes. Seeing what needs to be done and doing it without being told. Getting things done smoothly, actively looking for ways to contribute. That jump, that's the movement beyond obedience.
So how do we coach that? That move from compliance at zero to proactive contribution at positive 10. The source material introduces a really specific concept here. They call it a behavioral curriculum for initiative, honor.
And they define honor not as some, you know, abstract philosophical idea, but as a three-part, really actionable mandate that moves people away from self-focus.
And that definition is, I mean, it's everything. It's what turns a resentful, obedient action into an act of willing service. The authors define honor as treating people as special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude.
And all three of those parts have to be there for it to count as honor.
Right.
So if you do more than what's expected, but you do it with a terrible attitude, you might have hit a zero, the work got done, but you haven't actually shown honor. It's targeting the heart, not just the hands.
I really appreciate how they connect this to the outside world. They call honor customer service brought home.
That's such a great phrase.
It is. It trains children to shift from that typical, why do I have to do this, self-focus, to how can I benefit the people around me?
It's the anti-selfishness curriculum. You know, we spend so much time focusing on managing behavior, but honor manages the internal intent. And the biblical context they use from Ephesians, it links both obedience, doing what you are told, and honor, doing more, to long-term success and well-being.
So the message is clear.
It is. If you want things to go well for you in life, you need to learn both of these mandates now.
I think the biggest struggle for parents, though, is the how, the implementation. If I tell my kid to empty the dishwasher and they empty it, how do I then demand they do more than what's expected without it just feeling arbitrary?
Yeah.
Or, you know, overwhelming?
That's a fair challenge, a really fair challenge. And the framework addresses it by saying you have to create a foundation first. Then you build initiative on top of that.
So you have to master the move to zero first.
You have to.
Tell us about that initial routine, that foundation.
Okay, so this is the basic cooperation practice. An instruction is given, the child has to receive it, and this is key, verbally acknowledge it, saying something like, okay, mom, or I understand.
So they commit to it.
They commit. Then they complete the job. And finally, they have to report back to the parent once the job is complete. This completes the whole communication loop.
That sounds like simple accountability, but I can already hear the pushback. Isn't that just adding extra steps to basic chores?
It might feel like it at first, but the authors argue this is actually step two, transferring responsibility and initiative even inside that simple instruction.
How so?
Because you're teaching them that they own the entire process, not just the middle part of doing the chore. So there are three required steps you can enforce during every instruction to train this.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First, when they're called, the child has to come the first time. No dragging their feet, no ignoring you. This trains respect for your time.
Right.
Second, when you give them the task, they have to immediately say, okay, mom, or verbally confirm it. That's the commitment. And third, they have to report back on their own without being reminded.
That report back step is crucial. I see it now.
It is.
Because if I tell my teenager to take out the trash, and 10 minutes later I see the full trash can and I have to ask, did you do the trash?
Well, I've just lost the initiative training.
And you're back to nagging.
I'm back to nag. Exactly. The report back step teaches accountability, and it closes the loop without the parent having to be the constant supervisor. If they miss one of those three steps, you just restart the instruction. You insist they complete the full cycle. You're teaching them ownership from start to finish.
Okay, so once that compliance foundation is solid, we can move into step three. Missions of honor. This is what pushes them toward that positive 10.
Right. This is where you make the whole concept of honor explicit in the home.
And it starts with language.
It starts with your language, yes. You use the word honor when you serve them. So if you pick up their favorite snack, you say, I wanted to honor you today by getting your favorite cereal.
So you're modeling it.
You're showing them that honor is an active choice to treat someone as special, not just a response to a command.
And then we can flip it with the famous honor check.
The honor check is a fantastic strategy for building initiative. You send your child on a mission of honor to a room, let's say the mud room or the bathroom, and the instruction is simply see what needs to be fixed and fix it. That's it.
That requires them to think critically, to proactively look for problems. I mean, that's the definition of initiative.
Absolutely. And the teaching point here is pivotal. Honor does not look for ways to get out of work. It doesn't let you use that excuse, well, I didn't make that mess, so it's not my job. Honor looks for ways to get extra things done, even stuff that isn't specifically their assignment. It encourages looking outward.
I'm thinking of that anecdote in the sources, the one about the two-year-old. That story really makes the power of this so clear.
It really does. The child wasn't explicitly told to make the bed, but because the parents had been modeling this and using the language of honor, this little two-year-old decided they wanted to contribute.
While the parent was in the shower.
Yeah. The child got so excited by this idea of fixing something that they made their own bed. It wasn't perfect, of course, but the pride and the initiative, they were so real. That's the internal seed we're trying to plant. The joy of being a proactive helper.
That focus on active contribution, it brings us to this really cool visual analogy the sources use to describe the family dynamic, this idea of family energy.
This one is so good. It tackles a core principle that every single member of the family, from the parents down to the youngest child, has a responsibility to add energy to the home.
And that pushes back against the common idea that kids should just be children.
Which often translates to have fun and take energy while the parents are constantly trying to replenish the supply.
Right. And the getting things moving activity makes it so tangible, especially for kids who are more visual or hands-on. So for you, the listener, walk us through this setup.
Okay, so imagine you have a tall glass cylinder. You start by adding 2 cups of cooking oil, then about 3 tablespoons of water, and then maybe 20 drops of food coloring.
And the food coloring represents all the tasks, the chores, the jobs, everything that needs to get done.
Exactly. So you have all these tasks just sort of floating there, suspended in the oil, and everything is stagnant. That's the status quo when everyone is operating at zero or below. Nothing is happening.
Until you introduce the activators.
Yes. The activators are 2 Alka-Seltzer tablets. And they represent the people in the family who are adding energy to get things done.
And as soon as those tablets hit the water, you get that fizzy, chaotic reaction. Everything starts mixing and bubbling and moving vigorously through the cylinder.
It's a perfect illustration. When family members choose to be activators, when they're focused on contribution, the entire home environment shifts from stagnant to dynamic. That decision to add energy, that's what honor demands.
And the source material connects this behavioral goal back to being fundamentally others-centered. It references that instruction in Philippians to value others above ourselves and not look only to our own interests.
And when you stop looking only at your own interests, whether your interest is rest or your interest is fun, you're finally free to see what the group actually needs. That mindset is what turns a child from someone who asks, "Why should I?" into someone who enthusiastically becomes an activator at positive 10.
This all sounds wonderful, but
yeah.
Let's talk about the parent side of this. It is so easy to get pulled back into reactive parenting, just dealing with the minus 10 meltdowns.
Oh, absolutely.
Switching to this kind of long-term framework of honor requires a massive change in the parent's mindset, too.
It requires deep self-reflection. The sources address this head-on. They ask parents to acknowledge their own fears that are clouding their judgment. You know, we worry about what the neighbors think, or we panic that if our child isn't fixed right now, they're going to fail out of college or be unemployed at 30.
Yeah, and those anxieties lead to what?
They often lead to short-term, punitive, sometimes desperate responses that are actually rooted in a kind of parental selfishness. We just want the problem to stop so we can feel calm again.
Right.
This framework calls for patience, for perseverance. It asks you to trust the process and look past the immediate frustration to the bigger picture of your child's development.
We have to anchor ourselves to that positive 10 vision, even when we are dealing with a minus 10 reality right in front of us.
That is the key role of visioning. The authors use a concept from Jeremiah to explain the psychological benefit here. This idea that there are plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future.
That idea of a hopeful, positive future, that point B.
It's the ultimate source of internal fuel for the child and for the parent.
So if the child can actually grasp that vision of becoming a competent, respected contributor, they're motivated to put in the hard work of growth. Even when doing extra stuff feels, well, hard.
Absolutely. When the vision for maturity is clear, amazing things happen inside their hearts. It moves them beyond just drifting back to those negative patterns because they're aiming for something much, much higher than just simple obedience.
So the core takeaway here really is that the mission isn't compliance. It's the transfer of responsibility. It's a development of initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens through this anti-selfishness curriculum of honor, which focuses not on stopping a bad behavior, but on proactively adding energy to the whole system.
And this framework offers this incredible benefit outside the home, too. The sources encourage us to think about how people naturally divide into takers and givers.
Right.
And they observe that those who lean toward the giving side, the people operating with honor, they're the ones who do better in life, are appreciated more, and who feel better about themselves.
So that connects the training at home directly to real-world success.
It does. We learn that service isn't a burden. It's actually an advantage. So if this whole process of honor is fundamentally customer service brought home, well, how might tracking the ratio of giving versus taking in your own interactions with your team at work, your service providers, even strangers in traffic, how might that dramatically influence the success and well-being you experience outside of the home? That's the proactive question we'll leave you to explore this week.